Welcome to Spoiler Piece Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm a member of Gallica, the Society of LGBTQ Entertainment Critics.
My name is Dave Riedel. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. My pronouns are he, him, and I also write for the Chicago Reader.
And my name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. My pronouns are he, him.
All right. We are here ready to talk. And I'm super excited to be back this week. I was off last week because I was in balmy, sunny Costa Rica living my best life. So I was having a blast.
Yeah.
But but now I'm here ready to have a blast with you two.
Yeah. Woo!
Over on our Patreon, before we kick off the show, we talked this week about the 1993 sci-fi action comedy Demolition Man. And we had a very lively conversation as we had three, some overlapping, some divergent opinions. So it was a really good time. And I now and forever will be terrorized and horrified because Evan sent us a picture that is in relation to the film about a prop of Sylvester Stallone naked. And yeah, it's scary. So anyway, go check out that prop if you want to Google it and see the horror show for yourself. Right. And if you're a patron, go check out the bonus episode. And if you're not, consider joining, because for $5 a month, you get to listen to bonus episodes and hear us chit chat about older movies. And I use older loosely because I don't like to think of the 90s as really older, even though it's still 30 years ago. So it's older.
Yeah. Simon says, go check out that Patreon episode and become a patron.
Yes, indeed. So this week, we're going to be talking about the Pakistani drama Joyland, and we're going to be talking about the thriller, kind of action film, but mostly thriller, environmental drama, How to Blow Up a Pipeline. So let's kick things off by talking about Joyland, Pakistani drama. And this is a film that has garnered tons of awards and tons of accolades. It was Pakistan's submission for the Oscars for international film. It got rave reviews and awards at Cannes. And let me give the synopsis. Oh, and it's written and directed by Saeem Sadiq. It stars Ali Junajo, Rosti Farooq, and Alina Khan. And here's the synopsis. This is a long one from the Oscilloscope Press Notes. The debut feature from writer-director Saeem Sadiq, Joyland explores the many sides of love and desire in a patriarchal society. Gentle and timid, Haider lives with his wife Mumtaz, his father, and his elder brother's family in Lahore, Pakistan. Following a long spell of unemployment, Haider finally lands a job at a Bollywood-style burlesque, telling his family he's a theater manager, when in actuality he's a backup dancer. The unusual position shakes up the steadfast traditional dynamics of his household and enables Haider to break out of his shell. As he acclimates to the new job, he becomes infatuated with a strong-willed trans woman, Biba, who runs the show, an unforeseen partnership that opens his eyes and ultimately his worldview in ways both unexpected and intimate. All right. So let's just dive right in. I mean, there's definitely a lot that happens in this plot-wise, but we're going to flesh that out. But I want to know, first of all, guys, what did you think of this? Evan, what did you think?
I think this is a great movie. It's very slow. I think that was my biggest issue with it, was how slow it felt to me personally. And I really appreciate all the themes that the film is exploring. There's a lot of complexity to the characters. There's a lot of layers to the commentary on the patriarchal society that they live in and the patriarchal household. And just a lot of kind of interpersonal drama that is quite devastating. So I feel like emotionally it was quite effective. It looks fantastic. Just some really gorgeous cinematography and some really striking shots. Some great uses of space. Overall, I thought it was good. Just a little slow for my taste. And then the only other thing is, and this is a personal thing, it's not really a ding against the movie. I just, in this particular instance, I found it kind of hard to root for a protagonist who was having an affair with his having an affair and then kind of driving his wife to feel so hopeless that she commits suicide. And I know it's not entirely on him. It's also the fact that, you know, she's kind of trapped in a society and a household that is oppressive. But to me, that was just a little bit hard to deal with personally. Not a ding against the movie, just something that I struggled with as I was watching it.
Ooh, I have divergent thoughts on that. But before we get into that, Dave, I want to know your thoughts.
I hated it. It was the worst movie ever.
Loved this. I know you did.
Yeah, I think this is one of the best movies I'll probably see this year. Yeah, I found this heartbreaking and moving, and I didn't find it slow at all. I think deliberate is the word I would use.
Good word. And
it's kind of interesting how it's neutral-ish about its characters. It's just kind of like, these are the things they do.
Yes.
And, agreed. But it is heavily critical of the patriarchal society, which, you know, watching that as me, it's kind of like, Jesus Christ, but you know, it's not my world. So yeah, I found this, moving and all of those things. And I think all of the performances were fucking great.
Yeah.
Could not agree more.
I think the best actor in the movie, though, of course, was the goat, because it had to act like it was slaughtered. Oh. So I'm just kidding.
Oh, my poor God. Goat. Yeah. Yeah. Content warning. Just in the opening couple minutes of the movie, they slaughter a goat.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's brutal.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that they use to show that Hader, I can't remember his name, isn't manly. You know?
Correct. Because Mumtaz has to slaughter, his wife has to slaughter the goat. He can't do it.
Right. And there are just all kinds of questions about him. I mean, he's an enigma-ish even by the end of the movie, you know? He's definitely a little bit of a cipher, which I think is fine, obviously, because I liked this so much. I think Alina Khan? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Great performance. And I think that, I can't remember the wife's name. Mumtaz. Mumtaz, yeah. She's great. The father is great. The sister, the Hader's brother and sister-in-law, great. It's all, they're just, everyone's amazing, you know? And it's also interesting that there is, in some of the characters, despite living in this kind of oppressive patriarchal household, actually have really liberal, like the two women have really kind of liberal ideas. But they're just like, you know, anyway, that's what I thought. Megan, how about you?
I absolutely adore this. I saw this at Sundance earlier this year, just a few months ago, and it's a film that I could not stop thinking about. So I was super excited to see it again. And the ending I actually watched twice. So the ending I have seen almost four times, and it destroys me each and every time. And I cry my little eyes out. I completely agree with both of you. Not that it's slow. Evan, I don't agree with that, but I know that's a personal preference for you, obviously. Mm-hmm. But all of the compliments that you both are saying, I completely agree. I think this is an absolutely beautiful, stunning film. It's incredibly heartbreaking. It's what I really appreciate is how empathetic it is. And like you were saying, Dave, like it's very neutral about the characters. I think that's a really, really astute way of describing it. And I think that this film conveys emotional vulnerability in a way I don't typically see in films. And I really love the way that it explores gender and the nuances of masculinity and femininity and being trans. And the nuances with that too, like the joy of being trans and the camaraderie of trans women, as well as the violence and brutality that trans women face when Biba is talking about her friend who was murdered. And it's so often when we see trans characters on screen, it's often, it's getting better now, but often it's in a place of tragedy. And so it's nice to see that she is trying to thrive, and in many ways is, in this society that's trying to keep her down. Like the scene where she's on the subway and the old woman's like, you can't sit here, you need to go somewhere else. And she's just very stoic and she's ignoring her because she has this armor built around her to survive a transphobic society. And then I love that Hayter just like sits and like he shields her by sitting in between this woman and her. I love that. Yeah. Like you, Evan, the visuals. I love the giant cardboard cutout that he's riding around on his scooter with. So like she's taking over his life physically and emotionally. Like it's such a great visual representation of that. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love how it shows the stifling constraints of patriarchy. I think I just fell under its spell. It's so tender and hypnotic. I loved this. And I'll probably watch it again because I loved it so much. I agree with you both that the acting is excellent, especially for me, the lead performance by Ali Junijo or Junjo, I think he's incredible. I think he gives such a subtle and delicate performance that's really conveying so much emotional range and interiority. I loved it. I found him absolutely captivating. I mean, everybody's great in this, but I found him really captivating. And I think it's really interesting when you both talked about the goat slaughtering scene. I also, rewatching this, I was like, oh, the first time we're seeing him, he's playing with the kids, which is such a traditionally like feminine woman. Like it's a woman's role to like tend to the children. And he's the one who caretakes the children. And I thought that was really interesting. Like just such a subtle but obvious way. And I think the way that this film plays with subtlety and obvious things is it's just that tension is just very fascinating to me. And I love this. I love the score, the visuals, the acting, and just that ending just wrecked me. So we're talking all about how these characters are like struggling within the society, and mm-hmm. you know, I didn't have the same issues with the infidelity that you did, Evan. And I think the reason for me why that is because I usually am very bothered by the way infidelity is handled in film. And I think it's because I got the sense that Mumtaz knew what was going on. And because of that, I got the sense that like she was kind of acknowledging it and wasn't thrilled about it, but also was kind of like, yeah, this is what you need to do. Like, just like in the way that she needed to have a job and she wanted to have a job and he wasn't going to stand in the way of that. I kind of got that sense that they were like, to me, it was kind of a fascinating way of showing that you can love more than one person because he clearly loved her, but he also clearly loved Biba. And so I kind of thought it was like an interesting way to kind of show a person who may be poly in a non-poly relationship. Like I just found it really fascinating and just kind of beautiful in that way that they really supported each other. And that ending is just devastating. So I keep alluding to it, but Mumtaz finds out she's pregnant and that's like the last thing she wants because she just wants to keep on working. And part of the reason she married Hayter is because we see in a flashback that he came to her and was like, you know, I know we're arranged to be married, but you can say no. And if you say no, I'll say no, because it's easier for the guy to say no, which is just so generous and lovely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's like, well, can I work? And he's like, of course. And, you know, and he's like, what will I do? And she's like, well, you could be a housewife or a house husband. And he's like, okay. Like, you know, it's just, they like get each other right from the start and are so supportive. And I love that. But she can't handle the fact that she's pregnant. She tries to leave. She doesn't leave. And then she commits suicide. And it's horrifying. And before that, he's lost Biba because he wants to do a sexual act that makes her feel not like a woman. And so she's outraged and breaks up with him, but yet she shows up to Mumtaz's funeral, which is just, oh my God, so devastating. But anyway, that ending where he's in the ocean and he's never been in the ocean and it zooms out slowly. It's perfection. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a part where he's talking with Biba, and she's talking about how she went to, was it Karachi? It was a beach in Karachi.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes home, and he's talking with Mumtaz about it. And she says something like, oh, maybe we could go sometime together. And then so after, yeah. after the, you know, then she dies, and then he goes, you know, makes the pilgrimage himself. And yeah, just watching him wade into the water. First, like, you know, just like up to his ankles and then up to his waist. And then it seems like he's, you know, going to be almost fully in the water as the film is ending. Yeah, that is a devastating ending.
Yeah. And something you're saying that I just realized as we're talking is that's a beautiful way to honor both of them, because Mumtaz is like, I went as a kid, but I never could go in the water because grandma wouldn't let me. And she's like, maybe we'll go someday. So that's honoring her, but it's also honoring Biba, because she's the one who had the seashell from the beach and was like, you know, you should go to the ocean and see how immense it is. So I love that it's honoring the two women in his life in such a really visceral way. Oh my God, I love this movie so much. This movie just destroyed me, and I love it so much. And I know I'm only talking like incessantly about it, but I love it. I can't get enough of this movie. I think it's stunning.
Well, this makes it an easier episode for me, because now I don't have to talk so much, because you're just saying everything I would have said.
Perfect.
Yeah. I did worry, though, because, you know, me being me, I was worried that, is he going all the way out in the water? I'm pretty sure he can't swim, you know? I did have that thought, and I was like, you know what? It's ambiguous. Let's just leave it there, you know? So, that was devastating too. Good music in this movie also, by the way.
Beautiful. Like
a great score and great incidental needle drop music too.
Yes.
I mean, I like Indian and Pakistani music, so I always have. So that was, you know, nice, but also like the, you know, like the EDM influence that comes into it. And very, very cool.
The dance number that they do after the power goes out, I thought was really well done. That was All the dancing scenes I thought were really interesting and fun to watch, and the rehearsal scenes where he's learning how to dance. That moment where she takes his shirt off and then has him like keep going, and they have this like really like charged moment between them.
That's a very great way to describe it.
Yeah, it is. There is electricity in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I found so fascinating about that is that reading about the behind the scenes. So the director had all the actors rehearse for like 2 weeks, but he had Biba and Hader. He had those two actors rehearse for like 6 months. They did workshops together. And I think that that really comes through, because they just have this electricity between them, and they just seem to connect it. Like, it's so believable that they're attracted to each other and connected.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I don't have anything to add. Best color commentary in the business, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I love this so much. I think it's a stunning, stunning film. And I think it's also really interesting that this film chooses to focus on the three of them. Like, yes, it's kind of this love triangle, but it's interesting to focus on each of them, but not just in how this love triangle impacts them, but just we see each of their perspectives separately. But like you said, Dave, about how great the brother and the sister-in-law are, we see their perspectives too. Like, Mumtaz has this great moment with her sister-in-law that's really tender and sweet when they're at the amusement park on the Ferris wheel. And, you know, and then there's another moment they have where Mumtaz is like doing laundry, or she's folding laundry or something on the outside. And her sister-in-law is like, you know, I wanted to be an interior designer. I went to school for that. And then I was told, well, what's the point when you should just like design and decorate your own homes? And it's like, you're getting a glimpse of the life that she wished she had had too, but wasn't.
Yeah.
She wasn't allowed to have. And so those little moments are just, this movie is just so good.
I liked after the funeral when the brother-in-law was trying to insert his own commentary, and sister-in-law was like, you shut the fuck up. Like, we are all responsible for her death, and like, we need to just sit with the uncomfortableness of that. And that's where I kind of felt like, that's for me, kind of getting back to the, where I felt like she was not okay with, I think she accepted the fact that the affair was happening, but I don't think she was necessarily okay with it, or maybe at first was not anticipating how much that would amplify her loneliness. Because for me, it was like the crushing patriarchal like household was part of it. But for me, it also felt like a loneliness of like, my partner is just like completely checked out. Like the moment where he gets up and says, I can't sleep, and he goes to Biba, and it's like she knows that he's getting up and going to her. And I just felt so devastated for her in that moment, because she's got to sit there with like a snoring kid that's wetting the bed.
I think this is the beauty of this film, is that I think it's ambiguous enough that you can interpret it, you know, in a multitude of ways. I didn't get that she, not that she didn't care, because I agree with you. I don't think she was pleased. And I think, you know, she even comes out and says that she's jealous, but I don't know. I had a very different reaction. I thought it was more that it was a kid and that that's it. This is the end of my life. I really thought it was the kid and not, it didn't really have much to do with Hader or the affair, because I think if she had the opportunity, she would have had an affair perhaps, because when she's watching that guy, you know, masturbate in the alleyway at night, you know, she's, you know, masturbating too. And then she stops and is very, you know, alarmed when her brother-in-law comes in and catches her. But I think that's interesting that, you know, that we're both having these opposite divergent opinions about her reactions, you know?
And that scene,
and I think we're both right.
Yeah. That scene that you mentioned too was deeply uncomfortable and just like probably one of the most awkward scenes I've ever seen in cinema.
Well, when the brother-in-law
walking in on the masturbating, like, ugh.
I know, she won't even make eye contact with him. It's like, it's like, dude, couldn't you just have kept on walking? Like,
yeah exactly.
Yeah,
he was leave her alone.
He was kind of a tool, but he was also there were some things that were mildly redeeming about him, like when Biba showed up to the home for the funeral.
Yes.
He was surprised, definitely surprised, and knew who she was, but was just like, this is not the right place to make a scene. And also, she's showing respect, so please come in, you know? Which I thought was, but then of course he pisses all over that, you know, two scenes later when he's admonishing. I do like that, you know, Hader starts throwing all the silverware at him. He's like, oh, now you choose to be a man, or whatever he says. And, you know, that's when his wife is like, you fucking asshole. You know?
I know. I love her. Because I feel like with the juxtaposition of her and Mumtaz, I feel like in a much lesser film, they would be like pitted against each other and you're not supposed to like her or root for her or whatever. But no, she's like, no, you're being an asshole. Shut the fuck up. And it's just, and she's being supportive and not of her jerk husband, or that he's being a jerk at that time. And I just really love that choice.
I was also interested. I don't know if this was intentional or, you know, whatever, that when it really comes down to the nitty gritty of Hader's brother and his sister-in-law's marriage, she's actually the one running the show, because she just like basically beats the shit out of him, you know? Not really. I mean, he keeps trying to like touch her on the show. I'm sorry, you know, calm down. And she's like, don't fucking touch me. And I kind of feel like he knows her well enough to know like, okay, this is, you know, I am wrong here, and I will just keep my mouth shut, which I think that is just an interesting juxtaposition from their father, from Hader and the brother's father, who seems to have, right until the very end, I do see a touch of remorse on his face in the funeral, but
yeah,
otherwise he's kind of a remorseless asshole, you know, but I don't really know how much that's his fault, but you know, let's I don't want to dive that deeply into it. You kind of get the feeling that, you know, if they had, that Mumtaz and I can't remember the sister-in-law's name, they probably could have run the show themselves, especially if, you know, once the patriarch dies, you know, right, that they could just like, well, I'm going back to work and I'm going to be an interior designer and you two figure out what the fuck you want to do, you know?
Exactly.
So
it's very true.
Anyway.
But yeah. But clearly Mumtaz couldn't hold out.
Yeah.
Although it was very obvious she did not want to have a child. Like, it was very, very clear from the
beginning when, you know,
yeah,
Hader's, you know, giving his dad the massage and he's like, oh, Mumtaz doesn't really want to have one right now. And then, of course, the asshole is like, she doesn't want to have one or you can't do it. And it's like, you know what? Why not you just punch yourself in the dick, okay?
yeah.
God.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
So I didn't like that character, in case you couldn't tell. So
yeah, he definitely is hard to stomach.
Yeah.
Speaking of other heartbreaking scenes, the scene where the other backup dancers are joking and kind of hazing Hader, asking about Biba's body, is a highly disturbing scene. And I love, though, that Biba comes in and confronts all of them, including Hader, for not defending her and standing up for her. And, you know, she's like, I've never cared what's in your pants. You know, why do you care what's in mine? And it's just, and there's another scene earlier where Mumtaz is talking to her sister-in-law saying like, oh, well, she's not a real girl. And it's just like, oh, it's like all these, you know, microaggressions and aggressions that Biba has to face is just, it's so awful. It's just so awful. But so realistic.
Yeah. The other thing that's kind of interesting about that scene with Mumtaz and the sister-in-law is like, they do say that, but at the same time, they're kind of like, eh. You know, it's a truly bizarre thing. It was like, oh, she, you know, she's not a real woman. But then at the same time, like, who cares if she's not? It's like, that's right. A very strange, like, dichotomy, you know, mm-hmm. Some compartmentalization going on there, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get, you know, people are complicated and they're not all of them are all horrible monsters or all perfect saints. You know, there's kind of like a blend, but I did kind of think like, oh, this is awful that they're calling her not a real girl. But then I was also like, oh, but they're cool with her being trans. Like they're not, you know, like,
right. Yeah. It's like when, Hader and Mumtaz are looking at the cardboard cutout, the gigantic cardboard cutout, and she looks at him and he just says, yes, she is that. And that's, they have that moment where they communicate, and then it's, you know, Mumtaz doesn't say anything, doesn't have any kind of like negative reaction. She's just kind of like, oh, okay. All right.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Oh, fascinating movie.
Mm-hmm. Dave, you probably will like it even more on a second watch. I did.
Yeah. Well, this is one of those things where I was just watching it and now I think that Evan maybe didn't feel this way, but I was like, oh, how long I've been watching this? It probably only been like 10 minutes. And I looked and I was like 45 minutes into it. I'm like, oh my God, for me, it was moving pretty quickly. Or I just didn't, you know, I was so consumed by it that it didn't, you know, I didn't notice the time. Although I did have to get up midway and get a snack, but you know, whatever.
Well, you know, sometimes you got to
2 hours and 7 minutes. So pack a lunch, you know, so.
Yeah. No, but I think consumed is a very good word. Yeah, because I found myself very, very enraptured. Like, this story really enraptured me and just was swept up in it, too. So, yeah. So, clearly, your mileage may vary as far as the pacing goes.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
I found myself fighting against it because I was like, I am interested in the story and these characters, and I do want to see where it goes. I just, as I was watching, I'm like, damn, I really wish this was moving faster.
Yeah.
You know, that's fair. I've definitely seen films like that where I'm like, I like this. I know I like this, but man, can we like, mm-hmm. can we hustle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I love this so much. And I'm glad that this has gotten so much adulation from people and so many accolades. Cause I'm like, I just think this is really stunning. And what I also found interesting was in the press notes, there's a director's statement from Saim Sadiq, and he talks about how this is a fictional story. This is not autobiographical, but he does call this emotionally autobiographical, which I think is really interesting. And he talks about how he was a young man who, quote, was never man enough for a patriarchal society. And I'm like, ooh, I have questions. I want to know more about your life. And he also called this a heartbroken love letter to his homeland. I'm like, oh, like, it's just so, like, on top of the movie being so sad, like, the way he talks about the movie is just stunning and heartbreaking, too. So, anyway, I love this. I could just keep gushing about this movie. Do we have any final thoughts?
Nah, I said it all.
Evan, what about you?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, then, gang, let's talk about how to blow up a pipeline, which is an environmental eco-thriller, and it's directed by Daniel Goldhaber, and it's also written by him, as well as Ariella Barer, who also stars in it, and Jordan Scholl, not sure how to pronounce his name. And it's based on Andreas Malm's 2021 nonfiction book of the same name. So this is a somewhat large cast. Oh my God. See, you go away on vacation and then you're all tongue-tied. And so it stars Ariella Barer, Forrest Goodluck, Sasha Lane, Jamie Lawson, Christine Froseth, Lucas Gage, Marcus Scribner, who, sidebar fun fact, is Bo on She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, and Jake Weary. So this is the synopsis from the Neon press notes. A crew of young environmental activists execute a daring mission to sabotage an oil pipeline in this taut and timely thriller that is part high-stakes heist, part radical exploration of the climate crisis. That is a very true and succinct synopsis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so basically this film, so that is the film. That is the film, is that they're setting out to blow up a part of the pipeline to make a statement about destruction of property, because as the film opens, you see destruction of property happening and like posters being put up like, your property was destroyed and here is why. And it's all about how the environmental crisis and damage and all of that. And then throughout the film are woven in these flashbacks about each of the characters and how they came to be on this mission and how they all came together to work together to this common goal. So what did you think? Dave, why don't you kick things off since Evan did last time?
Okay. Well, sorry to be a downer, but I kind of hated this.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
I know this is getting universal praise everywhere, which I just don't understand. And I sound like a broken record, and we always talk about this, but this, I kind of feel like this. Listeners, if you go over and listen to Demolition Man over on the Patreon, you'll hear me talk about how there was nothing surprising and it was totally predictable and everything. And I just found this so unremittingly predictable, and just all the characters were dicks. And not without reason. Don't get me wrong. You know, you're dying of cancer because maybe you live next to a power plant. You can be a dick. But, you know, just I just couldn't get into it. And then when the whole FBI thing came up, I was just waiting for that. I was waiting for the one who I thought was the informer to be the informer. Mm-hmm. And then she was. And it's just like, I just don't. Ugh.
Well, I mean, they showed her taking photos on her phone, you know, throughout the movie. So you knew that she was an informant, but I think it was interesting that they actually knew she was an informant and used that to their advantage.
Yeah.
I didn't see that part coming.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming either.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole thing just kind of, I did think it was, now this is because I like, you know, like scenes of people working. I did think it was interesting when they were like making bombs and strapping bombs to the pipeline and that stuff. I found so the like the 14 minutes when they do all that shit, you know, I was just like, oh yeah, don't drop that fucking barrel. That would suck, you know.
Oops. And then compound fracture leg. Yeah, I'll just drive with that. No problem.
I have another foot, you know. So, yeah, I hope it's the right foot. Fuck me. Yeah, I just couldn't get into it. So. I think where it lost me entirely, though, is when the boyfriend said to the informer, and I can't remember any of the characters' names, by the way, said, like, I was all state and track. I'll just make a run for it. It's like, oh, good God.
Yeah, that was Logan like, and Rowan.
This is just so stupid. I just hate this, you know? Ugh. Yeah, I think that I've read some reviews because I didn't know anything about it other than that it was based on that book, which I'd heard of, but I haven't read. I was like, man, this movie is fucking driving me crazy. Let's look at the reviews. And like everything is fucking glowing. I'm like, well,
it is.
I am in the fucking tiniest of tiny minorities. I mean, I don't think I read one single review. I think it has 100% Rotten Tomatoes. So.
Yeah, does. It does, Dave. Based on at the time of this recording, based on 24 reviews, it's got 100%.
Good thing I'm not a Rotten Tomatoes certified critic.
Yeah, and I just saw one of my favorite critics, Jordan Searles, just wrote a glowing review of it, calling it one of her favorite films of the year.
Oh, wow. Man.
Yeah.
I saw a different movie. I really did. You know, maybe I should have watched it backwards, like it's Memento or something. Ooh, I don't know.
So, Evan, what did you think? I'm so fascinated.
Yeah, I'm not. I didn't hate it. So I'll start there. I didn't hate it. I wish I liked it more. I think, although it can be effective, the use of flashbacks while they're planning everything and doing everything. I found it kept sucking me out of the action. And although it is very tense in places, particularly when they get down to it and they're, you know, strapping barrels and digging holes and avoiding drones and being shot at by oil company employees that are carrying guns, I found every time we were in a flashback, I kept just getting kind of pulled out of the action emotionally. And so I had a hard time establishing a kind of rhythm with the movie. And especially toward the end, when with like, I think the last flashback I felt like was not very effective for me. It felt like it was kind of, I didn't need it. I would have been happy to just continue with the action as it was happening. Mm-hmm. But I did like the cast. I think this was an interesting cast of characters. I like the premise that you have these people who come together to blow up this pipeline, and they're led by this kind of like radical group of college students who, when you kind of look at them, you wouldn't necessarily think these are people who came up with this plan to blow up a pipeline. They're very kind of like unassuming people on the surface. And so getting to know them and understand where their kind of radicalism comes from, I think is served well by the flashback. So I did enjoy that aspect of it, is kind of seeing how they all kind of came to this conclusion that this was what they needed to do to really, you know, stir the pot and kind of knock people on their ass and make them do something about this, you know, fossil fuels and environmental crises. And so, yeah, there were elements of it I did like. I did think the cast had chemistry. I was excited to see Forrest Goodluck and Sasha Lane back together after seeing them both in Miseducation of Cameron Post and thinking they were fantastic together in that. Mm-hmm. And Marcus Scribner, I loved him as Bo, so I was very excited to see him in this too, kind of playing a very like unassuming kind of guy that you wouldn't necessarily think is one of the key people behind this whole operation. Mm-hmm. So I think mostly it worked for me, but you know, I'm more in the middle. I think I didn't love it, but I'm also not in Dave's camp, and I didn't hate it.
Yeah. Oh, I also hated the way it looked too. Just like the cinematography drove me fucking crazy.
Oh, I love the cinematography.
Ugh.
Man. Yeah, I really did. Yeah.
Oh, the score. I like the score. I thought the score was fantastic. Was
good. Yes.
Score is good.
Yeah, so that. Gavin Brivik's score is stunning. I am so glad you brought that up because you beat me to the punch. I was just about to say that, Evan. Yeah, I found it an eerie, intense, propulsive score.
Yes.
It is mm-hmm. so good. And it has this like almost futuristic tinge to it, yes. which I found really fascinating because reading the director's statement in the press notes, actually it was a statement from the writers too. And the editor, it wasn't just the director, but from the four of them, they talked about how they felt like they wanted to infuse these kind of dystopian visuals and themes into this very present day film and kind of like mirroring where our world is heading towards. And I feel like the score, and I'm like, as soon as I read that, I'm like, yes, that's where the score, because like the score felt so reminiscent. And I'm like, why does it remind me of something? And that's exactly what it reminded me of, is like very much a dystopian kind of sci-fi score, which I love. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The score is perfection.
Yeah. It really works.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So I thought this was fantastic. So I really liked this. I liked its grittiness. I liked the 16 millimeter cinematography. I liked the visuals. I liked the intensity of it. I would have liked it even more intense. But yeah. And I think the score is doing a lot of heavy lifting. Not going to lie. Because that score is just incredible. I would not be surprised if that's one of my favorite scores of the year. I agree with you, Evan, that the cast is great. I love Sasha Lane. She's the reason I wanted to see this film. I knew nothing about it except she's in it. And I was like, I'm in, because Sasha Lane picks mm-hmm. really interesting projects. And whenever she's in something, I love her in it. And I'm obsessed with her in American Honey, which is such a fantastic film. She's so great in Miseducation of Cameron Post, like you said. Forrest Goodluck, same thing. Every time I see him in something, he's excellent. I also really love Jamie Lawson in this, who plays Sasha Lane's girlfriend. She's so great in the indie film Farewell Amour, which is a really wonderful film. And so, yeah, so they were my favorites, but like the whole cast is pretty good. I'm not a really big Lucas Gage fan, so for me, he's probably the weakest, but even him, he was fine in this. And I was like, yeah, he's all right. But I agree with you. I think, and Marcus Scrivener also was great. I really liked the way the cast worked together. To me, they felt like they knew each other, and some of them liked working together and some of them very reluctantly worked together. Yeah. And to mm-hmm. me, I very much felt that vibe was very realistic. Like it felt believable to me. Because I guess if you're committed to a cause, you wouldn't necessarily like everybody, but you would feel like you rally together around this higher purpose, as it were.
Right.
Yeah. The one thing I will say about the flashbacks, I really liked the flashbacks. And I agree with you, Evan, that the last flashback, the placement of it doesn't work. Whereas I think in other cases it does. Like I think the editing is quite good, but in that last one, I think it's poor. It doesn't work. But I do like it conceptually because I like the idea of knowing how they came to be and more. But I kind of don't feel like we learn enough about these characters. I would have liked to have learned more. Interestingly, Dave, I don't find them assholes. Like I'm kind of perplexed by that. Like I was like, I don't really find them assholes. Like, is it because they're doing illegal activities? I don't think that's you. I don't think that would be your vibe as to why they're assholes. I don't know. I'm not really understanding why you think they're assholes.
They just all seemed very disagreeable to me. Like if I met them in real life, I'd just be like, you suck.
You know? I hate you.
They'd be like, yeah, too kinda. Left wing for you. You'd be like, oh.
No, I mean,
I was like, I knew that wasn't the case.
I don't have a problem with people blowing up pipelines. I just, you know, I don't know. I'm just
teasing, by the way. Yeah, I didn't.
the whole vibe of the thing, just, you know, I think it's because I like the premise. And personal politics aside, I like the premise, or should I say leaving personal politics out of it. But there's just something about the execution of it that I was just like, you know, so
that's, you know, that's fair. Sometimes it just, you know, it doesn't gel.
Sometimes
with what
things
you want,
don't
you know?
Work for you, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I will say as much as I liked this, and I did, I liked this a lot. And I feel like I need to watch it again to pick up on perhaps there's more nuances that I will appreciate more a second time around. I do feel like this is in certain ways a more impactful film on paper than it is in its delivery, but yes. I still really enjoyed the hell out of this and appreciated it. Like, and I, it's not a subtle film. It's very obviously dealing no. like in any way, but there are, but the funny thing is that there are a few kind of subtle things happening, like the way it's, so it's obviously exploring environmental justice and eco-terrorism and how history often frames activists as terrorists. And I wish it kind of had delved into that a bit more.
See, I would have liked some more of that.
Yeah, I agree. But something that's kind of interesting that more on the subtle side is that it's dealing with queerness and racism, especially environmental racism in a very like that there, it's dealing with in a very subtle way. And so I kind of appreciated that it's like this merging of overt commentary along with some subtler commentary. That I appreciated. But yeah, what I also appreciated, I agree with you that I think the bomb making and the technical aspects are really fascinating and riveting. And the reason I think they are so riveting is because they're actually very accurate, supposedly, because they consulted, let me see if I get this right. Yeah, they consulted with a counterterrorism expert who asked to remain anonymous, who guided them exactly on how to build bombs correctly to destroy a long stretch of 3-inch steel pipeline. They met with pipeline engineers so they could come up with a way to destroy active oil pipelines without causing an ecological disaster. I'm quoting this director filmmaker statement. And then they also interviewed environmental activists, some of whom are in prison. So I appreciate the dedication to getting the details very, very right. And I kind of would have liked to have seen more of that because I think that is the most effective part of the film.
Yeah. But also I think there's like a live wire quality to use a pun. There is a live wire quality to it that adds tension there.
Yes.
When they're building the bombs, that literally one false move, one slip of the finger could blow that they could blow themselves up, and that moment after Forrest Goodluck accidentally, you know, hits something, and it, you know, you think that for a moment that maybe he blew himself up. That was just so, oh my god, that was shocking to me.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I also think it's really fascinating how willingly they are to put their lives on the line and sacrifice so much for what they believe in. And I think in a way we don't often see in film. Like, we often see sacrifice when it pertains to war movies, or sometimes melodramas, but we don't really see it in this way. And I think that in many ways was really fascinating and riveting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, and you know, I think I, like I said, I don't think they're assholes the way you do, Dave, but I do think something that's interesting about them where I think I kind of can find common ground with you on this is that they're not the stereotypical heroes. They're not fully anti-heroes either, but they're not like, they don't exhibit necessarily heroic behavior in kind of a conventional way, which I liked. So maybe that's why it resonated more with me.
Hey, you're talking to a person who only watches anti-Westerns when he watches Westerns. So I don't have a problem with, you know, protagonists who are, you know, also antagonists. But
Right.
I just kind of felt like, you know, from a practical standpoint, I don't, everything they're doing makes sense to me. I just was like, you know, maybe take that edge off 10%. I don't know. I just everything was just such hard edges, you know, as far as like nobody's personality, nobody was just like, I don't know if, you know, an environmental activist would be middle of the road, but none of them, the only one who was kind of just like, yeah, sure, was the kid. I can't remember his name. The one at the end, he meets one of the guys in a library. That's how they meet. I can't remember what his character's name is.
Oh, yeah. I think that's Marcus Scrivener.
Yeah, he's like the only one who's kind of like, yeah, you know, whatever, I was doing the sound, but I really came out here because, you know, I'm looking for people like you. And he's like the only one who's just like, oh, here's a guy who's, you know, not going to, you know, burn down the house just because, you know, I don't know why. I can't even think of a fucking metaphor. So, yeah, I just couldn't get on board with any of these people. And it had nothing to do with like the subject matter or what they were doing. I was just like, I don't like any of you, you know? So I think it was also because like the informant's boyfriend, whatever his name was, I was just like, would you stop cracking wise and being a shithead? Just fucking take it seriously, would you? Jesus.
Yeah, I'm going to say if I was running a crew of people that were doing this, those people would not be in my crew because they're too unpredictable and messy. Mm-hmm. Absolutely I wouldn't not. Be in this crew either, though, because I have shaky hands and you're not putting me in the bomb building position or bomb handling position. It's just not just a reality. It's just I'm not going to be that guy.
You could be the getaway driver.
Sure. Fine. But don't put me anywhere near those bombs.
Or those straps to hoist the...
Nope. Nope. Can't do it.
The keg up.
Got to play to our strengths. That's not my strength.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a feeling that if nothing else, Evan, you would... The heist elements would resonate with you.
They did. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think is why I liked this so much. I really liked that this was very much like a heist film, and the film really leans into that. While, like I said, I think for me, the only thing that would really make it better is that we learn more about the characters. I would have liked to have learned more. But to me, it's not a knock against the film. I just would have liked more.
Hmm. Yeah, I see what you mean. When I think back, it feels like the characters feel kind of thin.
Yeah, especially Sochi, who it's interesting because she's one of the co-writers. But yeah, I would like, I don't know. I would have liked more. But that's it. But I like the concept of destroying property as a political act and as a statement. I also like the framing of it as, you know, this is a defense, you know, like, anyway, but I liked it. So, do you guys have any final thoughts?
No.
All right, gang. Let's do a quick recap. Joyland.
Yay.
Evan.
Yeah, I'm ultimately a yay.
Mm. Oh, yay.
I was going to say, would that be a yay-ish? I mean...
It's not as enthusiastic of a yay, but it's still a yay. I wouldn't go so far even to say it meh, because I think the movie is really good. I just found it particularly slow for me.
All right. And I would also say a very, very, very enthusiastic yes, because as I've said, I've already watched it twice this year in the past 3 months. So I would definitely, and I can't wait to watch it again. So that should tell you something. So this opens today in New York City theaters, and it opens on the 21st of April in LA. So hopefully it's going to be expanding to more theaters and to VOD soon. How to Blow Up a Pipeline. This is also opening today in theaters. What do you guys say?
I don't think there's a lot of gray areas to where I am.
Yeah, I'm going to assume you're going to say pass on it.
Yeah, it's a hard no, but I mean, I'm definitely an outlier, so take that for what it's worth.
We need outliers, though, much like the characters in the film.
Yep.
Evan, where do you fall?
I would say I'm a yay on this. Maybe slightly more enthusiastic yay.
And I am also a yay on this. I'm probably, of the three of us, probably the most enthusiastic about this. But yes. So a huge, huge thank you to our editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, thank you so much for making us sound great week after week.
Thanks Otto. Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you get podcasts. We are all over the place. You can also find us at our website, spoilerpiece.com. You can find us on social media. We're at Spoiler Piece on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and TikTok. So come follow us. Say hello. Speaking of saying hello, you can email us spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can give us a call
at 862-21-PEACE.
Leave us a voicemail message, text us, let us know, yes, you love Joyland too, or yes, I totally agree with you, Dave, and how to blow up a pipeline. I don't understand the hullabaloo and commotion for it.
yes.
Dave's giving it a thumbs up sign.
Uh-huh. And we did get a text recently that said, "Hi, Jack, nice to meet you." I'm assuming that's just a wrong number.
But if for some reason it is a reference to a movie or something, let us know.
Yeah.
Hinge date gone wrong, you know?
Oh. Yeah. I hope it's not. I don't want to be the cause of thwarted love.
Although I do think it would be funny if people, you know, met someone at a bar they didn't want to give their real number to and gave them the spoiler piece number. That would be pretty amazing.
That would be hilarious. Yeah. I would love that. I would love that. As someone who really likes Tinder Live, which is all about mocking bad Tinder profiles, I would love that. Yes.
Right.
So. Yes, give out the spoiler piece number if you need
and if you
number.
Do that, tell us, and then we can, you know, have really awkward, bad conversations with the people who try to text that number.
Yes. So basically, to sum up, we're here to help you with your love life. We're here to help you navigate the perils of dating. We're here to help you choose movies, you know, so we just love to help you. And so
we're a full service podcast.
We are a full service podcast.
Yeah.
So if you like our services, now that just sounds weird and creepy. But if you like the show, please consider rating and reviewing us by going to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. That will take you to your preferred platform of choice to rate and review us. And that really helps us get the word out about the show. And if you really, really like the show, consider joining our Patreon. As I said earlier, this week, our bonus episode was on Demolition Man. We had a great conversation on that. And every week we put out bonus episodes. So for $5 a month, you get access to those. You get to vote in monthly polls. And you get to access our back catalog of approximately 300 bonus episodes. And we always have a great time. We have a great time in the main show too, of course. But if you listen to the show, you know we always have fun and we always have a good conversation. And we have more of that on the bonus episodes. And if you're already a patron, thank you so much. So my name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and I'm a member of Gallica. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
My name is Dave Riedel. I write for the Chicago Reader. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and if you want to follow me on the social medias, I am Dave Sees Movies at Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter. Yeah, those three.
And my name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of Your 80s Movie Guide to Better Living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.